Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
It's Mike Shope.
You might be mocking me or you might be staunchly agreeing with me. I can't tell.
I'm mocking you.
And the Bulldog.
What is Fozzie Bear's role in this production?
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Big week. NFL draft weekend. Thursday night, round one from Nashville this year. And these picks, Bulldog, have wide-ranging implications. Players' lives, people's lives will be affected.
Mm-hmm.
That includes mine.
Yep.
Because what are you gonna do with your teams? Redraft leagues. What about the rookies? Dynasty leagues. Draft picks in dynasty leagues. So much to figure out. Joining us now on the Western Hotline, the great Sigmund Bloom from Football Guys. Bulldog knows this as well as anyone, Sigmund.
Yeah.
How's life?
Oh, it's great. You know, this is a fun time on the eve of the draft. I like to think of it as all of the potential alternate universes are going to collapse into one, into the one that we're in, because destinies change. And, of course, the destinies are our fantasy teams. But, like you said, of coaches, of players, of franchises – and we can play the what-if game, and we can stop playing the what-if game. And I also like to say teams can't lie during the draft. They really put their money where their mouth is, and it shows us the direction the league is going. 5 years ago, the idea of a 5'9", 5'10", quarterback number one overall was unthinkable. So the NFL is evolving.
Yeah, it would seem. It really was. And there's really no good comp for Kyler Murray because of his size.
Even Mayfield was short for a first overall pick last year, and he's, what, 2 inches, 3 inches bigger than Kyler Murray is.
And there's no comp for him because of the way he plays the game, too. You can see that outfielder charging the single to throw the runner out at home in his game, where he'll make throws on the run or on the move or just from odd platforms that look like throws that he can't make until it comes down in the hands of Hollywood Brown or another receiver. And that's going to put defensive coordinators on notice that the old ways of defending a quarterback, he keeps the whole field in play. And ideally what Josh Allen does too for the Bills, where as a runner and as a passer, the whole field is vulnerable the whole play, which really makes it difficult to defend them.
Yep. I definitely welcome the sort of softening of the NFL's ways here. Like the evolving nature of that position. Like for a while, it failed to make any sense to me that guys would play a certain style in high school and college and these spread offenses and like, well, you know, we need them to learn how to take snaps under center. Why? Like just keep going. It works. And we're finally starting, I think, to see that. It moves at times glacially slow, but, you know, back-to-back years, the Oklahoma quarterback, not a big guy and looking like another first overall pick is, it's a real positive, I think, for the league.
Yeah, and it's exciting because even though Roger Goodell's mad that his number one pick has been spoiled, nothing is spoiled about how this is going to go. So it's going to be exciting. Spectacular failure, spectacular success. It's going to be one of the best stories to watch.
Let's talk about landing spots a lot here today, Sigmund. Right. So that'll be Arizona probably, and we'll see what happens with Josh Rosen too. But you're thinking about this as a football fan and also a fantasy player. What about Murray and the Cardinals together?
Sure. I think it's great because you have, ideally, this quarterback with a coach, a head coach, who's been given the keys to this franchise, who has been lusting after him all along.
Yeah.
So you hope there's a rational plan to maximize what he can do. And then you look at the downstream effects for someone like Larry Fitzgerald, career arc-wise, someone like Christian Kirk, who also meshed well with the strengths of Josh Rosen, someone like David Johnson, and you know, like we were just saying, it's the NFL being more open to being flexible to create offensive schemes and play designs that make the most of these players' strengths. So this offense that was morose and really dead in the water for most of the year last year, you have a player in Murray that can mask some of the deficiencies on the offensive line. So I think it's really exciting for this offense. And we can see, you know, maybe not the whiplash turnaround we saw from the Rams, but certainly something where with the offense we see week one next year is very different than what we saw last year.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, we'll leave it at that. As far as the top receiver or receivers in this draft go, and I know I'm a Bloom 100 reader,
sure.
Sigmund, so I know that you have Butler from Iowa State, Hakeem Butler, at the top of your list. Let's talk about him, I guess. He's not, in most places anyway, the top receiver here. But you like him, and what's your thinking?
Well, it's that combination of being a long-limbed player who can win at the catch point, but also he's strong after the catch. He can break tackles. He can elude players after the catch, and he's fast. He's more than fast enough to be a vertical threat with his size. So he's a very difficult player to defend, and he's a bit of a late bloomer. So this is one of those things where in draft profiles, these things can cut both ways, right? He's a late bloomer, so maybe he's got more room to expand, or you're not as assured that you're going to get this player in the pros. Josh Jacobs is similar. Some will say, well, Nick Saban's smart, and he didn't make him his clear lead back. But the flip side of that is, unlike Eddie Lacy, unlike Mark Ingram, unlike Trent Richardson, there's a lot of tread left on the tires. He's not coming into the league a broken player already. So I just think Butler, the ceiling he offers with that rare combination of traits, and you see him playing aggressively, aggressive as a runner after the catch, aggressive in his routes, aggressive when the ball's in the air. Those things combined, to me, if he can be a number one for a team, to be the kind of thing we look for in fantasy.
So do you have a landing spot chosen already for this player?
Well, it's interesting because, as Mike was saying, we're not as the league doesn't seem to be as high on him as some of us draft analysts are. So he could well fall into the second round. I, as a Steelers fan, I would love to see him be that next Plaxico Burress type for Ben Roethlisberger as he plays the last few holes of the 18 of his career. But I think what you want is a quarterback like Roethlisberger that will give him a chance to win when he's covered or otherwise, to use those skills as opposed to, say, someone like Deebo Samuel or A.J. Brown, who could hoover up 100 receptions in an offense like the Rams offense. You know, someone like Cooper Kupp, who Cooper Kupp is a great fantasy receiver. If he had landed in a different place, we might not even be talking about him.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that an aggressive quarterback who will make those throws downfield, extend plays. I mean, hey, Arizona, take Butler at the top of the second round. Someone like that, if you pair him with Kyler Murray.
With Sigmund Bloom of footballguys.com here on WGR, Mike Schoep and the Bulldog. Well, he probably won't be the first receiver. And Metcalf is the name, DK Metcalf, who's come up the most often for this. We've talked about him here a little bit. And then you get maybe down toward the second half of the first round where the Ravens are, or other teams that maybe are closer to winning or just really have the need at that position. What about this player, Sigmund, and where would be best for him? Because there are a lot of analysts who are kind of just not as confident in him.
Yeah, this is one of those classic players, or you focus on what he can do or what he can't do, because there's been a lot made of his three-cone time and short shuttle time. He's not a bendy athlete. He's incredibly fast in a straight line. He's strong. And he actually has really underrated feet. He has quick feet, the release. He can make some hay happen after the catch. I think that, you know, we've seen him mentioned in some mock drafts, even as high as number 9 to Buffalo, and that just underscores that it's that straight line speed and the ability to stretch the defense and make those big game-changing plays that's especially what Metcalf offers. So again, you want to have that quarterback with the arm strength like Josh Allen, with the ability to extend plays like Josh Allen. You don't want him to be, so you know, Washington is a team that I see him paired with a lot at 15.
Mm-hmm.
And I think of Case Keenum or Colt McCoy, and I think, well, you're wasting him on that team. So you definitely need a big arm quarterback. You know, Seattle would be an interesting team. I know they want to trade down, and Metcalf could fall in the first round. Seattle would be an interesting team because of Doug Baldwin's injury woes and because of what Russell Wilson can do. So I, you know, he's a bit of a wild card. And also, of course, with Oakland having two picks, John Gruden, his mad scientist, may decide, well, let's go all in on this wide receiver core. But again, they don't have the quarterback. They have dink and dunk Derek Carr.
You know, the guy that shows up at the combine and just puts on a show, jumps out of the proverbial gym, mm-hmm. always kind of freaks me out a little bit.
Sure.
Because, you know, on one hand, you want to credit the guy for being driven enough to get in max condition for the combine. But it, in a certain way, it sort of seems like a flag to me that you're gonna do all that, and yet you played in college. And like, where was the supreme athleticism? Why, did you try hard enough when you were in college, like, to be the best receiver you could be? It just sort of cuts both ways, I think.
Yeah, and I think with Metcalf, you have A.J. Brown, who may go before Metcalf, and you have DeMarcus Lodge, and you have Dawson Knox, their tight end, and they didn't have a very good quarterback, Jordan Temu, who could get drafted, but they didn't have someone who's taking advantage of those abilities. And I think that you have an issue with the injuries that Metcalf has had. That being said, what you're looking for is the skills that unlock all of those physical traits, because we've seen players who have all those physical traits, but if the skills aren't there, if they can't play, then it doesn't matter. And I think with Metcalf, we have seen enough to know that it isn't all flash. But I think these kinds of questions are exactly what teams are asking themselves. Is Metcalf is someone you'll see a wide range, projected again as high as 9 or 15, and all the way falling to the end of the first round.
Hey, Sigmund, is there any reason to not like Hockenson in the top 10? I mean, one thing that always comes up with tight ends and used to be with safeties, if it isn't still, like, I don't know about that position.
Yeah.
Is that not a thing anymore?
I think that's not a thing anymore. I think it's not a thing anymore because of what we talked about, with the creativity of offenses now. And it's really on, if you can't get top 10 value out of someone like Hockenson, it's really on you, because he's a tremendous blocker. And a smart blocker, too. You can see him square off one-on-one with a defensive end in pass protection, but you can also see him get outside the numbers and wipe out a defensive back to spring a wide receiver screen. And you also see him, he'll have plays where he'll block more than one player on one play. And you'll see him have plays where he starts out as a blocker and ends up a receiver for a big play using some deception. So you can move him, you can put him anywhere in the formation, and he's maybe not the most athletic or the most talented pass catcher, but he is more than good enough to be a very strong weapon in the NFL. So it's really on the offense that uses him. I think you're going to see him maybe Jacksonville, although I would expect Jonah Williams, the tackle from Alabama, to be the pick there. Not falling, though, I would not expect Hockenson to fall farther than 12 or 15. And if we could see something like Detroit take him at 8, or Detroit could trade down, say, to 13 or 15 and take him at 13 or 15, but that's the range he's going to go.
Do you view the Bills as a team that would value a tight end at 9? Like, I've been saying in here for weeks, I want them to be a team that values that position enough to do it, but I have my doubts.
Yeah, they would be perfect. I mean, it's funny that one of my colleagues, Josh Norris, after T.J. Yeldon got signed, said, activate the wishbone. But look, the idea, and I'll give Brian Daboll credit, that you don't have to stay within the traditional box of what offenses do when you have a quarterback like Josh Allen, and now you have that speed outside to stretch the defense, and you have a piece like T.J. Hockenson who can strengthen your running game and your passing game, and he can strengthen your passing game out of run looks, and he can strengthen your running game in ways that, I just think that, given that Brian Daboll saw what he had in Josh Allen and said, well, let's make this work with what we have, and hopefully this offensive line can gel with all the additions they've had, I think Hockenson would be an excellent piece and one that they might be situated to take more advantage of than other teams.
Mm-hmm. What do you think the Raiders do? Yeah, take the rest of the segment.
We try to get a bead on them. And then they remind us that John Gruden is like, the hyperactive kid who just wants, he just has his eye on something. But Mike Mayock is the adult in the room here. So, when we've seen the oral history of the Antonio Brown trade, I think it's Mike Mayock that allowed them to get that incredibly low price for Antonio Brown, because he's the brakes and Gruden's the accelerator. I think at number 4, they're going to probably have Quinnen Williams or Ed Oliver fall into their laps, or Josh Allen. I mean, you can run the draft any scenario you want, and they're going to get a pick of one of those three players. I think you don't mess it up unless someone wants to pay a king's ransom to be put for the quarterback, but I don't think the other quarterbacks in this draft are going to attract that price. And then at 24 and 27, I would pencil in Josh Jacobs as one of the picks for Oakland.
Okay.
Which makes too much sense. And otherwise, then they can kind of let the draft come to them a little bit. I think there are some second-tier edge rushers they could definitely use, and an interior lineman, too. This is a team, they're looking towards Vegas, right? So So they could take someone like, say, Jeffrey Simmons, a tremendous interior defensive lineman who might be a top 10 or 12 pick if he hadn't torn his ACL in the pre-draft prep. So they have the flexibility to do that. So if they walked away with, you know, Quinnen Williams and Simmons as this twosome, and then Josh Jacobs to give their running game a dimension. And they're also in a position, you know, if one of these quarterbacks, a Haskins, falls too far, they can snap him up at 24 or 27. They've got a lot of flexibility.
Do you think Jacobs will be the only first-round running back? You have him going that low to Oakland, then that's probably it, right? Nobody's going before him.
He should be, because it's not that this we've gotten spoiled with the last two running back classes. Jacobs gives you the power runner plus the pass blocker and receiver. He's one of the best at both of those things in the class and just plays with a mean streak. They're going to love him wherever he lands. But otherwise, maybe Daryl Henderson from Memphis is the other one who provides something that's rare. And what he provides is the ability to break tackles and win collisions, and it has the acceleration and speed to break long plays. So, you know, for someone like Buffalo, and I mean, I know they just signed Yeldon, and you're really going to take four backs, have four backs you're going to carry into the season. I don't know. Perhaps I know we were going to talk potentially about them making a trade, one of those late-round type trades. But someone who can create big plays out of your bread-and-butter basic running game, that's what Henderson provides. So if there is a second one, I would say Henderson would be the guy. But I would expect that we see most of these running backs come off the board really on the third day, because teams know now, we've watched it week after week, it's kind of a replaceable position, Bell to Connor, Gurley to Anderson. It's just not an essential position in the draft.
Right. We'll get into more of those fantasy types conversations later on in the summer, spring and summer. But as far as this draft goes this week, Sigmund, and the quarterbacks, back to them. After Murray, you've got three or four guys, I guess I'd say, that are somewhat comparable, and, you know, maybe for this team this would work out, or we think this team likes this player. Is there, maybe for each one if you want, but or just one or two, like, are there a landing spot for these guys like Haskins, say, where that changes him for you, where he becomes, instead of there's a range from, you know, that'll never work, or there's someone in the way, to that'll be perfect?
Yeah, I think that so for Haskins, for instance, he reminds me of Byron Leftwich, where he does not create a lot of room and negotiate the pocket. He needs room. He needs a big area to operate, and then he can make excellent decisions and make excellent throws and break down a defense. So, for instance, if Cincinnati takes him with the shambles their offensive line has been in, I don't like it. If the Giants take him with all of the investments they've put into their offensive line, you know, they get Solder last year, they trade for Zeitler, they've had drafted Will Hernandez. You know, they have an excellent offensive line to give him that space. With someone like Drew Lock or Daniel Jones, both, I think they need time. So actually having someone in front of them could be a good thing, because teams don't wait on their first-round quarterback anymore. And I want to mention Will Greer from West Virginia, who's a name that we could hear as that fifth quarterback. I know Jay Glazer was saying we could see five quarterbacks in the first round. And what you like about him is his aggressiveness. And when you think of a team, I know he was mentioned with New England, that could be looking two or three years down the line. I really like that kind of fit, where you have a quarterback almost like a point guard. I think that he did that at West Virginia. He can do that in the pros.
Do you have anything on the UB quarterback, Tyree Jackson, Sigmund?
Oh, I think that you have, much like we were talking about with Dable and Josh Allen, but that's kind of a early phase of development for Josh Allen. With Jackson, I think you have to look at what you have, which is kind of a late career Colin Kaepernick kind of quarterback. It's almost like the longer he has the ball in his hands as a passer, the more bad things that can happen. He can occasionally make something dazzling happen, but you really want to set him up in structure and then give him the green light and say, if it doesn't come open in the first progression, feel free to take off and really leverage his ability as a runner. And I think that can absolutely work with the incredible physical talents he has. And then that takes more off of his plate, where sometimes you just see that, look, he's not going to be a quarterback who's going to sit back there and take apart a defense, dissect them, you know, by reading the coverages and outlasting them in the pocket. You want to use his athleticism and size and some playmaking instincts outside of the pocket. You don't want him sitting in the pocket for too long.
Sigmund, before you go, on Yeldon signing here, where were you on him when he was with Jacksonville? I mean, there were a couple times when Fournette was suspended or injured, and people tried to figure out how to make that work for them fantasy-wise, DFS mostly. you know, right. Ivory and Yeldon. Like, was he somebody that you liked generally in those situations?
He wasn't a good fit for what they liked. You know, they took him in the second round, and he was a bit of an upright running back. He was losing in short yardage. He isn't necessarily a pile pusher, but he's reinvented himself as an excellent receiving back, an excellent third down back. So I think that he's more part of a committee now than the lead back that they envisioned him to be when they drafted him in the second round. But I wouldn't be surprised at all if he is the lead back for the Bills next year. And if they create that, and again, it's the offensive line gelling around him. But if they can create that role for him and it can be successful, because one thing I think the Bills are getting a lot of is buy-in from the players on the roster. And whatever we are saying out here, I think the people on the team believe in McDermott and believe in the plan. So I like this as a sneaky one. And look, the fact that they signed him right before the draft is meaningful because every other team is putting the free agent plans on mothballs because they're going to draft players. They want to see how the draft goes. So I think they may have plans for him, and I think it's an excellent signing, and it's probably he's going to be better than the running backs that are going to be going in the fourth or fifth round.
Okay. You going to have any shares of Fournette this year?
Ha! No, and I think that, you know, some of it is just that Jacksonville's stuck in the past. We're talking about the NFL evolving, and it just feels like Jacksonville is stuck in the past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a weird one because he can't keep from, you know, messing up their plans or whatever. Like, it's just been so many different things with him in not that long a period of time. Very good. Well, I'm sure you'll enjoy the weekend, Sigmund. Always a treat to talk to you.
Yeah, I always look forward to any opportunity we get to talk and look forward to the next one.
Thank you. And everyone, check out the Bloom 100. So you can see, even like, we didn't get into defensive players here at all, but Sigmund's like thorough and smart ranking the list. Thanks again. All right. Sigmund Bloom, footballguys.com. And the wishbone. You can talk me into it.
What, the wishbone?
Sure. You
get
can talk
that,
me into
get
it.
Get out of here.
I like this quarterback running. He was incredible at it.
Yeah.
Like, give me more of that. If they can figure out how to make that work when teams are prepared for it.
Right.
And like in a second season when teams are maybe going to want to challenge him to throw the ball accurately somehow, mm-hmm. Compared with last year, if he can still make the running work, that's a real weapon.
Right. So last year, the most effective he was running was out of 4 and 5 wide sets. Like, that started to become a thing. Spread it out. And I think the Bills, whether or not they've got a guy they signed that's going to catch, you know, piles and piles of passes, I kind of doubt it. But they've got better players than they had last year, and they had success spreading teams out and letting him run. So I would expect that that's going to be a part of what they're going to be about on offense.
Yeah, I wonder how much you can count on that, you know, against good teams. Right. I wonder how much you can count on that without being able to just, like, you know, play the rest of the position very well.
Right.
Yeah, it'll make them interesting this year, one thing about that. And also, we'll see this weekend what they do to add to their offense. Maybe there's another running back, although now, I don't know. Maybe there's a tight end here. There could or should be a wide receiver here. Draft week. 803-0550 for your comments. What do you want from the Bills? We'll talk about the first round and keep going here. Sal Capaccio joins us at 5. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR.
Yeah, he's an interesting player because he started off with a pretty solid PFF grade, and he was a guy that we liked. He's capable as a receiver. He's capable of carrying the ball on the ground. He's a pretty well-rounded back that can kind of do it all. But the longer he's gone on in the league, that grade has just gotten steadily worse.
Heard Sigmund Bloom on Yeldon with us, and now Sam Monson, Pro Football Focus, as well on the station earlier today. Bill signed 25-year-old
mm-hmm.
TJ Yeldon, formerly of Jacksonville. And I just feel like a McCoy trade really makes sense now. I think not that this should ever rule the day, but Brandon Bean, who I think probably had a chance to trade McCoy last year, might now have another chance. And if he doesn't, at some point, they're going to have to see him really bounce back and perform. Or else, that'll be a thing that gets mentioned when Bean's career plays out. Maybe not at the top of the list, but just, what did you do with this particular asset? Something I think about, because I think the Bills' loyalty to McCoy has been almost confusing. like he has had off the field.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the production isn't great. It's a running back, so you really don't want to be spending big money, and they are. They're adding these guys around him, which is always kind of interesting. I just really don't get it. So if Yeldon is another reason to think that McCoy could help them in the draft, then that's what I want to think is happening here.
First thing I thought when I saw Yeldon, not that he directly replaces McCoy as your bell cow back or anything, but it's another guy. And, yeah, I thought maybe having Yeldon here, maybe you pick somebody on Saturday at the draft to add to the mix and find your way to, you know, moving McCoy along. This is the last year of his contract, right? Like he, so, yeah, I mean, they can save some money, but the decision will really be made for them next year. I mean, I just can't imagine them extending him, like getting another contract for him with this team. Unless, you know what, unless he plays, just he doesn't get traded and plays out of his mind here this year. But I wouldn't want to predict that happen. I think last year was a real thing. Like they were not, you know, fully formed on offense. They had line problems, and you know there were issues. But I think it's not really even debatable that Ivory was more effective running than McCoy was. So that all those issues would have been there when Chris Ivory had them. Not that he was great, but I think he was more effective.
The Bills are building their offense the way I built my card collection 10 years ago. I just realized that. That's what they're doing. Because I said the same thing a lot about them. Like they're finding good deals, you know, on the rack.
Mm-hmm.
Or what they hope are good deals. What they know is they're not going to get beat too badly on anything.
Right. They're not going to be stuck with money on any of the guys, really. Morris might be the only guy.
So you're spending money you're allowed to spend and have. And you're not going to get burned, really, here too badly. And you think you're improving. So that's good from their standpoint. That's what they're doing. When I was collecting, back when I had the card show and everything, I haven't bought a card in like years, but back then, that's I realized like that's how I was doing it. I was getting opportunities. That's what the Bills have as an NFL team. They have, you know, roster openings, and they have the cap room and everything. They have the opportunity and good value. Good value was my leading principle back mm-hmm. then. And I have to tell you one thing at the end of this, but like there would be opportunities. People would hear the show or hear about me and then I've got these old cards. And like that could be an opportunity and maybe I would buy them and I would make sure there would have to be good value or else I wouldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
What I never did, which I regret deeply, is save my money.
And buy the one.
And buy the big card.
Right.
And I never did that.
Right.
Because I just, you know, this other stuff worked for me just fine.
Right.
Having like a B-list collection.
Right.
Was what I was going for.
You get what you want out of it. You spend time with those cards and like whatever so why, if you don't have the need to spend all the money, then don't do it.
The opportunities would come, and that would help me do what I wanted to do, which is spend money. But really what I should have been doing, at least some of those times, especially early on when I was buying, I was really gambling more, what I should have been doing is saving for the big,
right,
like the mantle.
This is how I am about the guitars that we collect.
Which are you? Are you like me?
I'm like you. Okay. I don't have, I mean, guitars, you know, you could spend easily, like $6,000 can get you a really, really nice Gibson Les Paul or ES-335. Like, those would be really nice guitars. I've got a few that are, you know, $500-$600. I got a couple others that were $1,000, but like, that's the max. And the room looks better. You know, I've got all these guitars that are there, and someone who really knows about guitars would look at them and go, there's really not anything all that special here, but it's pretty cool. Most people don't have a room with 25 guitars sitting in it, right? So it makes an impression, but someone who really knows would go, you don't have the thing. You're like, you don't, what's missing here is the guy, like the stud, the first overall pick. You know, you don't have that. Like, eh, I know, I'm all right. You know, they all play real nice. You know, they got different character. I polish them. I spend time with them.
Well, what the Bills have that you and I don't have the luxury of is the draft pick.
Right.
So you can draft the $6,000 guitar or the Mantle rookie.
That's right.
Like, you can do that.
Right.
We can't.
You don't have to pay the actual trade list price. Right.
Right. You can't sign that in free agency as the Bills.
Right. Right.
Or probably trade for that. They tried. Tried that once. Yeah. There was a Mantle rookie on the trade market this year. A corner was ripped off, but still it was a Mantle rookie, so the Bills could have had Antonio Brown.
Right.
Other teams had a chance to get him with that corner ripped off, and the Raiders did. Now they'll try to fix the corner. I'll stop. Gronberg. So said earlier we were going to get to it and never did. So, you know, cool. Let's see it. Let's see the Sabres do that, right? Is there any reason that you have to not like that idea?
No, I don't have any reason to not like it. And I think it's about the best you could do right now to avoid looking like you're just settling for whoever will take your job. Like, if you were targeting the experienced guys, and, you know, you didn't land McClellan. I don't know how interested they ever were in Vigneault. We heard, I think, reliably that they reached out to Quenneville before he took the Florida job, and he told them, I'm going to Florida. So if you just end up hiring your AHL coach or an AHL coach, I think it's going to be hard to dispute that they just had to settle for that. You go get a guy and have him move his young family from Sweden to Buffalo. You know, I think you've accomplished something in the way of sort of dispelling the idea that you weren't attractive, that you were able to go get someone.
Yep.
You know, and yeah, he doesn't have Stanley Cup rings, right? But he's, you know, accomplished a lot in the game internationally, and I think it would be I would want to give them a lot of credit if they pulled that off. If they can get that guy to come here, like, that would impress me. That doesn't mean he's going to be any better than Chris Taylor will be. But appearances-wise, I think you would be able to hold, you know, the news conference, it would be hard for anyone to accuse them of just, you know, being, you know, having to just take, you know, take whoever.
It's a good beard, this guy.
Yeah.
Rickard Gronberg, who started his career as a college coach here, not in West New York and Wisconsin, but he, 50 years old. I think it's a very interesting idea for the Sabres, and I'm kind of rooting for it. The other idea, or one other idea that's been talked about a lot, is Chris Taylor, the Rochester coach. But, you know, like, who knows? Is he ready? Is he interesting to them? Is there going to be a long playoff season for Rochester? And would that matter into how you wanted to go about this? There might not be a very long one at all. They've lost their first two games at home. They need to win three in a row or else it's over for them against Toronto, a team that won the Calder Cup last year. So they lost both games at home, second game in overtime. And so it's now it's the must win for them, three straight. They have not won a playoff series since 2005 when Ryan Miller was their goalie. That's the last time Rochester won a round in the playoffs. All right, Sal Capaccio coming up in 15 minutes. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here at 803-0550. This is WGR.
Yeah. All right, first concert ticket giveaway of the week here for us. We got a pair of tickets right now to go see Wiz Khalifa Sunday, July 21st at Darien Lake Amphitheater. Minimum value of this prize is $60. Courtesy of the nice folks at Live Nation. General contest rules apply. Oh, you know you love these. This is one of these win them before you can buy them deals. They go on sale Friday to the general public at livenation.com. Caller 5 right now at 644-9878. Good luck.
I do love those.
Yep.
Did you watch the Sharks Golden Knights game?
Sort of. It was on. I was I had to take a real good look at it. It was on. I was aware of it, but I was not sitting in front of it.
All right, it was on though. I was watching Motown. Mm-hmm. Motown at 60 or something.
Okay.
Smokey Robinson.
Nice.
The guy's still out there.
Yeah.
Putting on a show. J-Lo, Diana Ross, right. Alicia Keys, I think I saw her. Stevie Wonder.
Good.
Motown.
Yeah.
It's fine. It was fun. Yep. Neo. It was fun. It was a good show. My kids liked it for a while. We were at a hotel. I didn't want to go. I thought flipping through all the channels was, you know, like sometimes in a hotel you have to just keep plus
right.
one, plus one, plus
find,
one.
I can never find the guide.
The guide may not even be there or just might. I didn't want to find a show that they would bug me about. Like, I'm just, say I'm going through looking for the hockey games, end of the night, and I'm going through and I get to some movie that they're like, oh, daddy.
Uh-huh,
I didn't even want to take the chance. So the first thing on, like, CBS maybe
this Motown
was
show.
Motown.
You just sat with
like,
it.
You know what? We'll just watch this. I just was not even going to risk it.
Right.
So we watched the Motown
there
show.
There is still, I will say, even in 2000 and what year is it? 19. That there's always a chance that you're not going to find the hockey game in a hotel.
Oh yeah.
I mean, that happens.
Sure.
It just that's how it goes.
This was in Ithaca. And I don't know.
Yeah,
that seemed iffy to me.
I don't. We stayed at, a reasonably nice hotel, like not the cheapest place we could find in South Bend, Indiana. When we were on our way to Iowa, and they didn't have NBCSN in the hotel we were at. Like, okay,
that's what I would have needed.
Like, so, right, that's where the hockey game would have been last night. Yes. So
yeah, by the time like we were watching this, it was into overtime, and I would have probably gotten into that.
Yeah,
but didn't want to risk it. Didn't want to end up at, you know. Oh, right. Look, it's. I mean, just what?
Yeah, the Leafs game brought back memories of the Sabres' last playoff appearance for me. Like Easter Sunday, like I remember
Game Six.
Game Six at home, chance to win, and like Sabres in that case lost in overtime, and then lost Game Seven in Philadelphia.
Had the lead. Toronto had the lead.
Yeah, that's right. Right.
There is so much on the line. It does not get bigger. It does not get bigger. For all I know, the Leafs might be prepared, if they lose, to stand pat and just do regular team things. Keep their coach, keep their best players. That, for all I know, that would be probably smart. But there's so much on the line now for them. Everything is right there. Lose, and who knows? What you change. You might make rash decisions that would be bad that you think you and your fans want you to make because you're upset. Win. Especially if Vegas loses.
Right.
Win, and you're almost the favorite. Like, you could just go win the thing.
Yeah.
You're no less worthy of that than Washington a year ago. Like, you could just go win it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's as big as I can think of. You go to the finals and lose. You're already probably really good. And you might think you're going back to the finals or the playoffs. And, you know, next year, you lose in the finals. You're not doing anything big and bad like that.
No.
You're not taking anything apart. This, though, would maybe be that. And you're losing to the same team, which is not the best team and even in your division. Like, it is just so big. One game tomorrow.
Yeah.
They lost to them in Game 7 last year after having the lead in the third. They lost to them that other time after having a 4-1 lead in the third.
Right.
Like, everything.
Yep.
It's just everything.
Yep. And they had, I don't know if you were watching that yesterday as it was happening, but like late in the third, before Boston got the empty net goal, man, Toronto was all over them. I mean, it was just, they were just in the Boston zone. And, you know, it's one of those things, as you're watching it, I'm thinking, they're absolutely tying this game. I mean, they just were all over them. Boston just could not get out of there. And then they yanked the goalie, and Marchand made a play, and they found their way to an empty netter. But, man, Toronto was buzzing.
I mean, the biggest Leaf game in so, so long. Just I'm not even prepared to say when. It's just, everything is sitting there with one game to go. Two games tonight, Washington to Carolina. Washington, Carolina, a small favorite at home, down 3-2. And Nashville at Dallas. Dallas also a small favorite looking to clinch that series. Sal Capaccio coming up. NFL Draft Week is here. We'll go over the top 9, as it happens, the Bills at 9 in the first round, and talk about their latest running back signing. That's next. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.